When the fullness of the time had come, God sent forth his son. That suggests that he pre-existed. If you're sent forth, you're sent forth from somewhere to somewhere. The idea is that Jesus had pre-existed with the Father in glory, and at a certain moment in time, i.e. Christmas, God sent forth his son as the ultimate representative of himself to the world.
Some say there is a war on Christmas in our society today, especially as the word Christmas is banned in schools, stores, and almost any public place. How should we respond? Today on The Connection, Skip Heitzik continues to look at the special meaning of Christmas as we differentiate tradition from truth. After the teaching, Skip and his wife Lenya talk more about the significance of Christmas.
Okay, so it's July and we're celebrating Christmas in July?
I'm noticing that, but it's called, it is Christmas in July,
that's
right?
A little bit strange, huh? But I think we can celebrate Christmas all year round. Because if you open the gift, Jesus Christ, you know, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that it's okay. Today could be your day of redemption. Today could be Christmas in your heart.
Many people believe the Bible has some helpful moral principles, but it's so much more than that. God speaks to you through his word, and you can discover how with this month's Connection resource. Skip Heitzig's entire Deep and Wide teaching collection, which includes 500 weekend messages. This resource is available for a limited time only. Here's all the info.
What's on your spiritual menu for the summer of 2016? Here's a terrific idea for a Bible binge with teachings from Skip Heitzig. Deep and Wide is a compilation of 500 teachings from Skip Heitzig. These messages make up 31 series that Skip has taught over the years, including God's Top 10, Drawing Near, How to Study the Bible and Enjoy It, Romantic Grace, Who is This Jesus, Running with Champions, and many more. For a donation of any amount, you'll receive Deep and Wide. This one-of-a-kind collection comes on a set of 8 CDs that can be played on an MP3 device or downloaded to your computer. And it's yours. You can watch endless reruns of The Gilmore Girls. Or you can order today and dive into a summer Deep and Wide Bible binge. Visit connectiononline.org/offers or call 1-800-922-1888. 1-800-922-1888.
Now, open your Bible once again to Galatians chapter 4, and let's join Skip for the start of today's study.
In some cases, there are verbs that mean the action is done, but the ramifications and the results go on and on and on. It's very, very precise. So, culturally, it came at just the right time, and it's no accident, I believe, that the mind of God is conveyed to the world in the New Testament via the Greek language. It was also the fullness of time politically. Who was in charge of the world at the time of Jesus Christ? What empire ruled the world? Rome. And they were about at their height of power. And they brought a peace to the world known as the famous Pax Romana, the Roman peace, an enforced peace, but a peace. So they had stationed at different places along the road system guards, legions who would keep the peace. What that meant is volatile parts of the world like Asia Minor, you could travel through and it would be stable because of the Pax Romana. On top of that, Rome built this incredibly extensive road system. Now, when I say road system, I mean they put stones and they actually hand-paved roads that connected parts of the world. A total of 52,819 miles of roads. And you can still see many of them all over that part of the world today. So what does that mean? It means that now you have a worldwide yearning, you have the gospel in a very precise language, and people can travel freely throughout the world. It was unprecedented. All of that never happened in line like that before. Also, it was the fullness of time prophetically. Prophetically. You know, the Jews had always believed in their Messiah, but there was this idea right before the coming of Jesus that all of these predictions would soon be fulfilled, that the Messiah would indeed come prophetically. I say the Jews always believed in the Messiah. They had a prayer that they would recite every day. It went something like this. I believe in the coming of Messiah, and even though he tarry, yet I will wait for him every coming day. However, though they always believed that, just prior to Jesus' arrival, there was an intensification of that expectation that the prophecies would be fulfilled. I'm going to quote to you from a book written by Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver. The name of the book is The History of Messianic Speculation in Israel. Listen to him, quote, prior to the first century CE, Common Era, the messianic interest was not excessive. The first century, however, especially the generation before the destruction of the Second Temple, witnessed a remarkable outburst of messianic emotionalism. Listen to his concluding remarks in this paragraph. The Messiah was expected around the second quarter of the first century. When did Jesus come? The second quarter of the first century. Now, why did they think that? They thought that because of a couple of prophecies. Daniel, in his prophecy, Haggai, in his prophecy, both said the Messiah will come to the temple. A temple has to be built. There has to be one in existence. When the temple was rebuilt and all of those things were lining up, they thought, he's got to come. One rabbi who lived 50 years before Jesus Christ, called Rabbi Nehumias, said the time fixed by Daniel for the Messiah could not go beyond 50 years. So all of this dialogue and writing was going on, and the expectation that these things were going to happen. There's another prophecy I got to remind you of. It's one of my favorite. It goes all the way back to Genesis 49, verse 10, where Jacob is telling the future of all of the tribes of Israel. And he gets to the tribe of Judah, which is the allotment where the temple was built down south. Jesus came from the tribe of Judah. And he says concerning Judah, Genesis 49, verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, till Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Now I'm going to read that again. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Scepter. We all know what a scepter is. It's a pole, right? It's a symbol, an emblem of authority and identity. But it says the scepter will not depart from Judah till Shiloh comes. Shiloh is a Hebrew word that means the one to whom it belongs. And all of the ancient rabbis said this must be a reference to the coming of Messiah. So they interpreted Genesis 49:10 to read, the national identity, which includes the right to enforce the law of Moses, will not depart from Judah until the Messiah shows up. Well, we have a problem. Because Josephus tells us that in the first century, Rome removed the right of the people in Judah to enact capital punishment, which they had always had the right to, even by the Romans until that time. So it would mean that if somebody, in their view, committed blasphemy and the punishment according to the Old Testament law was stoning, they could not do that. That's why they had to go to Pilate to get Jesus crucified. That right had been taken away from them. Well, when that happened, the Talmud records that some of the Sanhedrin, the Jewish ruling elders, paraded around Jerusalem with sackcloth and ashes on their heads, and they said, woe to us, for the scepter has departed from Judah, but the Messiah had not come. Now, what they didn't know when they were parading was that a few miles north, up in Nazareth, a young boy was ready to leave his father's carpentry shop and go to Galilee and select disciples and would soon manifest himself as Messiah. The scepter had departed from Judah, but Shiloh had come. Messiah had arrived. So we have a universal yearning, the gospel in precise language, ideas and people traveling freely and under peaceful conditions, and you have all the prophetic elements like dominoes lined up. So when Paul says, when the fullness of time had come, it really was full. That phrase is pregnant with meaning. Let's go on in our text, because we find out that Christmas not only came with precision, it came and it concerns a person. When the fullness of the time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law. Now, let me unpack that. Christmas concerns a person. It's not about a time. It's not about a celebration. It's really all about a person. And the person is described. He's called God's son. God sent forth his son. Now, we hear the term son of God, and we think that, you know, it's been so watered down. People say, well, we're all sons of God. To the Jews of the first century, the idea of being the son of God meant your God, your deity. You're connected somehow to Father God. It means oneness in essence and character. That's why the Sanhedrin pressed Jesus and they said, are you the son of God? And he said, I am. They said, well, we don't need any further proof. That's blasphemy. Let's kill him. That was a capital offense to them. He claimed to be the son of God. He was the representation of the Father. Notice it says God sent his son. That's interesting language. The text doesn't say, and when the fullness of time has come, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. So when the fullness of the time had come, God sent forth his son. That suggests that he preexisted. If you're sent forth, you're sent forth from somewhere to somewhere. The idea is that Jesus had preexisted with the Father in glory, and at a certain moment in time, i.e. Christmas, God sent forth his son as the ultimate representative of himself to the world. So whatever happened to Christmas? I'll tell you what happened to Christmas. Jesus Christ, the person of Christmas, has been rejected, and he's been rejected because he perfectly represents holy God to this world. He's the person who is called the Son of God. It goes on to describe God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law. Now that is what we celebrate every December 25th, that, the birth of Christ. Here he was, heaven sent but earthly born, the incarnation of the God-man. Jesus wasn't a good man. He was the God-man. He was sent forth from the Father to the earth, and at a certain moment in time was born of a woman and born under the law. So this suggests in one verse the dual nature of Christ, fully God, sent forth from the Father, fully man, the incarnation. By the way, the world acknowledges this every year. They don't know it, but they sing songs like Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Glory to the Newborn King. Listen to the words, veiled in flesh the Godhead see, hail incarnate deity. Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father in human flesh. Now, I know we hear that. I know we hear it every Christmas. And honestly, I think it goes right over our heads. I mean, we can't relate to that. Philip Yancey tries really hard to get us to. He says, imagine for a moment becoming a baby again. Now, just do that. It's hard, isn't it? Imagine for a moment becoming a baby again, giving up language and muscle coordination, the ability to eat solid food and control your bladder. God as a fetus, writes Yancey. Or, he continues, imagine yourself becoming a sea slug. That analogy is probably closer. On that day in Bethlehem, the maker of all that is took the form as a helpless, dependent newborn. So, at the perfect time, the perfect person came. That's what Paul is saying. At the perfect time, the perfect person came. And he was perfect because he was God and man. As God, he was sinless, thus the sacrifice was pure and perfect. As man, he could suffer and die, and so he could take the hand of God, being God, and take the hand of man, being man, and bring God and man together. There had been such a gulf fixed between them. God, through Jesus Christ, brought us together. At the perfect time, the perfect person came. But there's a third, and we'll close with this. Not only is Christmas special because it came with precision, it concerns a person, but it contains a purpose. You want to know the purpose? You want to know the reason that there was Christmas? It's stated in verse 5. Here it is. To redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father. Now that's the purpose of Christmas. Let me tell you what a couple of those words mean. Redeem, redeem. It's a word that means to buy out or buy back. It's the word exagorazo in the Greek. And exagorazo means to go into the agora, the marketplace, and pay money for somebody who's a slave, and then give that slave his freedom and say, you can go. That's what it means to redeem. And then the word adoption. Well, you know what that means. It means to take somebody who is not your natural child and confer all of the rights of a natural born child on that adopted, to give the status of sonship to someone who's not naturally born. So what's Christmas all about? It's all about redemption that leads to relationship. It's all about God figuring out a way to go into the slave market where we were shackled by sin and pay the price to give us our freedom so that all of those set free could become his sons and daughters. It's all about redemption that leads to relationship. How do you do it? How do you do it? What did he pay with? If redeem means to pay a price, what did he pay with? How much did you cost, God? Well, it's answered in Revelation 5. It's part of the song you and I will sing in heaven. To Jesus, it is sung, you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood. That's what it cost God to make you his daughter, to make you his son. Listen carefully. There is absolutely no salvation in the birth of Jesus Christ. You can celebrate that every year, every Christmas, put up a nativity set, I believe in Jesus, the baby Jesus. I love the baby Jesus. I don't want him to grow up, but I like that whole baby thing. And I have a nativity set and a Christmas tree. There is no salvation in his birth. There is also no salvation in his life. He lived the perfect life. And so many people say, well, I love Jesus Christ because he's a noble example and we love his example. There's no salvation in his example. There's no salvation in his perfect life. There's also no salvation in his words. You might love all the red words in the New Testament. I love those red letters. I read them all. I've memorized them all. There's no salvation in the words of Christ, as wonderful and noble as they were. There is only salvation in his death and shedding of his blood. That baby became a baby. Christmas happened so the baby could grow up and die on a cross and shed his blood for the sins of the world. That's how salvation happens. And that's what Christmas is all about. Or to sum it up in one little statement, all that we've said so far. The Son of God became a man so that men and women could become children of God. The Son of God became a man so that men could become sons of God. That's what Paul is saying in Galatians chapter 4. So, at the perfect time, the perfect person came with the perfect purpose. Adoption, redemption, to get a whole bunch more kids. See, a lot of people say, what kind of a father would allow his son to go to a cross and die? One who so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever would believe would not perish, but have everlasting life. The perfect time, the perfect person the perfect purpose. Spiritual children. So whatever happened to Christmas? Well, I guess it depends who you are. If you're a son or a daughter of God, Christmas is all the time, all day long, every day. There's a reality of relationship. Let me tell you something very ironic. You know, here we are in America, getting rid of Christ, getting rid of Christmas, substituting it for happy holidays, seasons, greetings. You want to know something astonishing? I was in a country some years back, far away from here, where there were nativity sets everywhere at Christmas time and the words Merry Christmas. And it struck me as odd because it wasn't a Christian country, it was a Muslim country. You know where it was? Iraq. I went to Baghdad and delivered some of these shoebox presents to kids, and everywhere I'd look, more than in America, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, nativity set. Jesus was more acknowledged. What if Christ had never come? There was a Christmas card some years ago that actually had, what if Christ had never come? And you open it up and it told the story of a minister who fell asleep in his study Christmas morning preparing for the Christmas message. Just for a few moments he fell asleep and he dreamed. He dreamed that he walked out into his living room, but there was no Christmas tree. There were no bells. There was no wreath. There was no Christ to gladden and comfort and save. He walked outside, but there was no church spire pointing toward heaven, no church bells announcing Christmas Day. He ran into his study all in a dream. There were no books on his shelves about Christ. He got a knock on the door from someone, again, in his dream. Said, my mother is dying. Please comfort her. Come to her. He goes, great, I've got the perfect message. And he ran to the woman's house and said, I have some promises I want to share with you. And he opened his Bible, but it ended at Malachi. There was no New Testament, no fulfillment of any promises, no Savior. Now, that's just a Christmas card, and that's just a dream, but in our country, there's a reality of people getting rid of Christ himself. So you know what I suggest this Christmas? Turn up the volume just a little bit. Happy, Merry Christmas. You can say happy holidays, but tell them what holiday you're wanting them to be happy about. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Announce it. And then don't stop there. Tell them about the Christ who came and why he came and what he wants to do with them. And by the way, if God's purpose is to redeem people, has his purpose been realized in your life? If Jesus came at the perfect time, maybe this is the perfect time for you. The perfect season, the perfect year for you to give your life to Jesus Christ.
At just the right time, God sent his Son to earth so men and women could become sons and daughters of God. Have you accepted that gift? Let's head into the studio with Skip and Lenya as they share more about God's plan for sending his Son to the world.
Hey, we're celebrating Christmas in
July.
And that's a little bit strange, but it's true. It's important that Christmas can be celebrated no matter what month of the year. God sent his Son into the world so that we can know him. Skip, how can we make sure his plan is fulfilled in our lives?
Yeah, I love that scripture where it says, in the fullness of the time, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law. Christmas is all about that, redemption. Christmas is about redemption that leads to relationship. So how can we make sure that plan is fulfilled? By being redeemed, by being one of the ones that he came to die for, and your life is in him. That's the first thing.
Receive the gift.
Exactly. That's it. Be redeemed. Have a relationship. Receive the gift. And receive the gift, you got to open the gift. Don't just say, yeah, I acknowledge there's a God. Open the fullness of what God has for you in your life.
I had a grandpa on my mom's side that one year refused to open his Christmas presents. It was just a phenomenon. All us kids, why isn't grandpa opening his presents?
Why is that?
I don't know what got in his craw, but they sat in a closet for a long time, and all of us, we'd look in the closet. Has he opened them yet?
They're still unopened.
Has he opened them yet? And so really, it could be Christmas in July, because if you open the gift, Jesus Christ, you know, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that it's okay. Today could be your day of redemption. Today could be Christmas in your heart.
Yeah, that's it. To open the gift, you have to open your heart.
Our listeners are a vital part of helping this ministry reach people around the globe with the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you've been impacted by Skip Heitzig's teachings, we want to ask you to consider taking the opportunity to return that blessing by supporting the ministry of The Connection. Right now, on your computer, tablet, or phone, make a one-time donation at connectiononline.org/give or call us at 800-922-1888.
Tomorrow on The Connection, Skip Heitzig looks at the words of a prophet who predicted the Messiah's birth.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on his wound. Make a connection. Connection.
The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.